Thank you. Good morning, all. Please be seated. Since everybody's here, we're going to start a little early. First case this morning is State versus, is it pronounced Rezine?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right. How much time would you like to reserve?
3 minutes, please, Your Honor.
3 minutes. You may proceed.
Thank you. May it please the Court, Jared Steed appearing on behalf of the appellant, Samuel Rezine. Your Honors, because the information failed to allege that an officer signaled Rezine by hand, voice, or emergency light or siren, it omitted an essential element of attempting to elude, thereby depriving Mr. Rezine of his due process rights. This Court should reverse and dismiss the attempting to elude conviction.
Are we bound by Pittman?
No, Your Honor. Certainly we are arguing that you are not bound by Pittman for a couple of reasons. Primarily, Pittman's interpretation of the essential element at issue here renders that language superfluous. You know, there's a reason that this language is in the statute, and that is to signal to the prosecutor, to signal to the court, that any audible or visual signal will not suffice, that it needs to be one of these four instances, and the officer has some discretion there with respect to which of those four he's going to use or any combination thereof. But what it makes clear is that a line is drawn between the crime of attempting to elude and the use of one of those four signals and, say, a different charge, such as obedience to police officers, flaggers, or firefighters, which is found in RCW 4661015. And that
could
statute...
Why the legislature used both the words must and may in the same statute and didn't mean different things with those words?
Sure, Your Honor. The legislature in this statute used the word shall and may. Certainly there's no argument from us that shall is anything other than required. But, you know, courts have recognized that may is directive as well, and I cite the Hutzinger case for that proposition.
Do you have a case where both words appear in the same statute and may has been given that meaning?
As being directive, Your Honor?
Yes.
Off the top of my head, I do not. However, I don't think that that is necessarily determinative of this court's analysis.
So we have a rule of statutory construction that says when the legislature uses different words in the same sentence, they don't intend them to have the same meaning.
That's correct, Your Honor, but that doesn't mean that may in this particular context is not required. What it means, what it signals is that, again, there are four choices here. The officer may signal by any one of those four, not that the officer can signal by a different means. And, you know, if the legislature in this particular instance, as it pertains to this crime, had intended for any signal, any audible or visual signal to suffice, it could have omitted this entire sentence and reached that same conclusion. This court needs to give consideration to the statutory language that the legislature enacted with the understanding that every word in the statute has meaning. And in this particular instance, the court's or the legislature's use of that sentence immediately following the audible or visual sentence, which again doesn't contain the word shall, but there's no dispute that that is an element of the crime.
So this is the WPIC 9402 has it in as one of the elements.
That's
hand, voice, emergency light, or siren. Does that mean that if the evidence was, you know, if all other elements were satisfied and the police officer was just pounding on the horn, what would that mean for an argument to the jury? Not guilty?
That would be our proposition, yes. I mean, you know, I think under certain circumstances, and that's really sort of the question here, is the prosecutor needs to be very careful in how they're going to charge this. Because if, for example, they charged it as a, you know, visual or audible by hand or, you know, shouting, for example, but the only evidence presented at trial dealt with emergency lights or sirens, then there would be an argument there for sufficiency of the evidence. And that would also go directly towards the, you know, second aspect of the statute, which deals with an affirmative defense of not realizing that this was an actual police officer. But yes, Your Honor. I don't know that this case requires this court to sort of constrain specifically what action is or isn't required. I mean, I can think of several instances that might not suffice. You know, use of signal flares or holding a sign or the beeping of a horn. That might not suffice. It might also, under certain circumstances, and I don't think this court needs to reach a specific conclusion on that point, simply to recognize that here, that second sentence of the statute was omitted in this information. And in so doing, it doesn't put my client on notice as to specifically what the prosecutor and the state is alleging the violation of the signal warning was that he didn't comply with.
The elements weren't challenged below.
They were not.
It was a bench trial, so we liberally construe it here at this point?
That is correct, Your Honor.
What is the prejudice, then, to the appellant here?
Well, 2 points on that, Your Honor. The first is that under Kvorcik, this court doesn't need to reach the prejudice. If this court recognizes that the elements are missing and that they cannot be fairly construed from a liberal reading of the information, then prejudice is assumed. And that's the position we're taking, is that prejudice is assumed here, and that's the end of the inquiry.
Is that an irrebuttable presumption?
Well, Your Honor, and that's the point to my second, the answer to my second point is that, you know, if this court is finding that those elements or is inclined to find that those elements can be liberally construed, then the prejudice here is twofold. One is that we have a potential problem with double jeopardy in that, you know, the information here doesn't preclude a second charge because it doesn't include anything regarding the signal that my client allegedly ignored, doesn't specify that. It doesn't describe the location of the crime other than, you know, in the state of Washington. And it doesn't name the officer that my client allegedly eluded. So we have a double jeopardy or a potential double jeopardy problem here. And then we also have a potential notice problem in the respect that, again, you know, if the state were to allege that the signal to stop was made by hand and the evidence doesn't show that, that's a missed opportunity for a sufficiency argument and or potentially a affirmative defense.
Does the evidence here say that they actually used a signal, they used the lights and the siren?
That is what the video shows, is that the lights and siren were used in this
particular. What does the information say?
The information charges, Your Honor, with... if I can address that in rebuttal, Your Honor.
You may.
Thank you.
May it please the court, I'm Donna Wise representing the state. I apologize up front for my voice. It's not really with me today. As far as what the information alleges, the information alleges that the defendant, having been given a visual and audible signal to stop, failed to do so. Your Honors, the plain meaning of this statute is clear. That's the first question in statutory construction. What is the plain meaning of a statute? And in determining plain meaning, the courts construe a statute as a whole. It's not a question of whether there's any possible meaning that could be attributed to it in another fashion, but reviewing the statute as a whole, relying on the ordinary meaning of the language used, any related provisions, what is the plain meaning of the statute? And the plain meaning of the statute is that it's prohibited to drive recklessly after having been given a visual and audible or audible signal to stop and trying to elude the police.
So the majority in Pittman says that the sentence is ambiguous and therefore, but it's an absurd construction to say it's a limitation as opposed to an illustration.
That's true.
Where does the state come down in this case?
Your Honor, the state, our position is that it is the plain meaning of the statute that the list is illustrative. That was the position of Judge Johansson in the concurrence. But also, I think partly that's why I began by talking about what plain meaning means, because I think when people, when courts and attorneys look at the words plain meaning, they think, oh, that means it must be obvious on the face of it. That's not the legal meaning of plain meaning. The legal meaning of plain meaning is construing the statute as a whole. What does that statute mean? And I think that's exactly what the majority in Pittman actually gets to, is the plain meaning. It's obvious. It would be absurd to say, oh, no, we're going to make it a felony, but only if this signal fits within this, what is actually a fairly broad list of signals. So essentially what we have here is the defense coming up with, well, there is a possibility that a flare could be used. I've never in my life heard of a flare being used to signal someone to stop. or a whistle could be used. Now, you know, we could get into arguments about what's a hand signal and all that, but that's clearly not the legislative intent.
Yeah, what is the legislative intent of this sentence, then?
Well,
or do we not look at that? Do we just look at the legislative intent of the statute as a whole?
I think the legislative intent is to use a what I consider a broad illustrative list to show that the scope of the statute is meant to be broad. Because
do we get to that question if, as you suggest, the meaning of the statute is plain on its face?
I think the court has to determine what the statute is, and if determining what the statute means is that that's an illustrative list.
Say if the statute's meaning is plain on its face, the inquiry stops. We don't go any further. We don't ask what did the legislature intend.
Right. We don't need to get to that point. That's exactly right, Your Honor. But as far as whether we know what the legislative intent is, in my briefing I directed the court to this final bill report when the statute was amended in unrelated ways in 2003, and it refers to the legislative scheme, which is that there's a misdemeanor or perhaps a citation of a failure to stop when signaled to do so, and that the intention of the legislature is that when a person drives recklessly, endangering the community after they've been signaled to stop and attempt to elude them, then that's a felony. And that's
there's a lot of criticism by some writers about relying on those bill reports because some of them are written after the legislation is passed by someone making a report to a group of people, and that the legislature itself never sees that bill report.
Well, that may well be a realistic criticism, Your Honor. I can only say that, as I again cited in my brief, the Supreme Court of Washington many times has relied on final bill reports as evidence of legislative history. And just in the nature of legislative schemes, that makes sense as a legislative scheme. The point is, if you endanger the community in your effort to avoid the police, it's a felony. If you just avoid the police, it's not a felony. There's no reason that the legislature would say, well, okay, but we're only going to make it a felony if it's within this list and if it actually was a flare or a whistle.
If the statute is, in fact, ambiguous, as the majority suggested in Pittman, what role does the rule of lenity play in our interpretation of what happens here?
Well, the rule of lenity, Your Honor, applies only after all the other rules of statutory construction apply. And if the court can't determine what the meaning is after all the rules of construction apply. So it's essentially a third step. And you look at some of the cases that talk about applying the rule of lenity. Irvin, for example, a 2010 case out of the Supreme Court, it's applicable only after employing all the other tools of statutory construction, one of which is to avoid absurd, strained, or unlikely results. And my point, Your Honors, is that it's just unlikely and absurd, as the court in Pittman said, to say that the legislature said they were going to exclude these minor methods of signaling from the list that would be included within this statute.
But why isn't that sentence surplusage then? The statute already says a visual or audible signal. Why did they keep going and add specifics?
Well, my response to that is twofold, Your Honor. First of all, it is an illustrative list, and it's a broad illustrative list, and the reason it was included was to show that the legislature's intent was that a broad list of methods would be included within this statute. But the second is if you...
But then the classic lawyer's way of dealing with that, if it's illustrative, is to say including but not limited to. And those words aren't there.
Well, the legislature isn't always as careful as we might like them to be when they write their statutes. And it's not a question of whether it could have been clearer if the legislature had made an effort to be clearer about it, or many statutes could not be construed at all. And my second point was, Your Honor, I'm sorry, that if this list is construed as exclusive, then the previous term, the previous reference to visual and audible signals, is superfluous because the list is what's the second sentence. So I think that rule actually cuts both ways in this instance. And I think you get back to, even if you determine that the statute is ambiguous, the result that the defense has suggested is the correct reading of the statute is an absurd result and a strained reading that's inappropriate. And I'd ask the court to affirm the conviction. Oh, let me address one more thing. I'm sorry. I wanted to address this double jeopardy issue, which I'm sorry, I just didn't understand what the issue might be. If the remedy, if this information is inadequate, is dismissal without prejudice, this case will be prosecuted again. If another case is prosecuted based on an eluding by the defendant on the same date, then a double jeopardy claim could be made, regardless of whether this conviction is affirmed or not. So I'm not sure what exactly that argument is. Unless the court has further questions, thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honors.
You have 3 minutes.
Very good. To answer your question. Okay, very good. Thank you, Your Honor. So I want to go back to the superfluous language here. You know, the first sentence in this statute deals with audible or visual signal. Doesn't include the word shall, doesn't include the word may. There's no dispute that that is a element of the crime. And so the reality is that these two sentences could have been one. And in fact, the WIPX treated as such, that the audible or visual signal must be made by hand, voice, emergency light, or siren. To interpret the statute in the way that the state is suggesting here and the way that Pittman interpreted it renders that secondary language unnecessary. If it, in fact, is an illustrative sentence, it doesn't add anything to the statute. And then this court's question is, well, why include it if that's the case? And I think that that's what distinguishes this particular instance from cases like Porter and Johnson and Allen, where you're dealing with a definitional element that's found in actually a different statute from the one that is relied upon for the charge. Here we have all of the language compactly contained in a single statute, and the word may directs the officer to the knowledge that he can choose from one of those four ways of signaling a stop or any, or you know, a combination thereof. I do want to move just briefly, Your Honors, as to a discussion as to why, you know, this court can't fairly construe all of the elements as being met from the rest of the information. The problem here, again, is the specific manner in which the officer signaled my client to stop is not specified. That precludes him from knowing what that signal is. It precludes him from raising a potential sufficiency argument or a potential argument regarding an affirmative defense with respect to the officer. And for those reasons, unless the court has any other questions, we'd ask that the court reverse and dismiss the attempted to elude charge. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.